Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Soul Goals Podcast. I'm Dawn, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. This podcast is dedicated to bringing people's stories to light and hearing their journeys of inspiration and self-growth. But it's also about connection and knowing that you are not alone. Each week, I get the chance to sit down and talk with an amazing soul, someone I've had the blessing of either meeting or following in my life. I am so grateful for my guests. Their openness and their vulnerability, it is unmatched as we share heartfelt conversations together about both their challenges and their triumphs. I hope that you can grab some inspiration and connection from my guests and their stories. I know I certainly have with each conversation. What an honor to sit with these brave souls. Everyone has a story, folks, and every story matters. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Soul Goals. My name is Dawn, and today I am very excited to talk to an old hometown dude from my neck of the woods. And it's your neck of the woods, too, but I'm just going to say, yeah, we're from the Stryker, Ohio. How crazy is that? Who is from Stryker, Ohio? Very few people, right?
A small, small number. We're in a sacred club.
Oh my gosh. We're in a sacred club. The Stryker, Ohio sacred club. We are. Yes. Elliot Mueller is joining me today, but he's not living in Stryker, Ohio anymore. He went to the University of Michigan and played football for, this is so hard for me to say, for the Michigan Wolverines. And the reason it's hard for me to say, I know, I'm Ohio State, diehard Ohio State fan. And as we talk, you'll figure out, interestingly enough, Elliot and his family, you were raised in a diehard Ohio State household, correct?
Yes, that's probably putting it mildly.
Oh, God. Well, yes. You and your other brothers, the three of you, I think it was really funny because there's a really great episode, not an episode, it's not an episode. It was on ESPN. It's called Miracle. And I watched that originally earlier when it had come out, and I rewatched it the other day. And gosh, when I watch it, like I tear up because it's just so, so authentic, so genuine. But something that I caught this time around was that your dad would spray paint a football field on the ground outside on Saturdays for you and your brothers and him to play football.
Yes. Yeah, that is correct. He used to do, all kinds of things like that, but that was always my favorite when, he worked for the state. And so he had one of those roller kind of sticks where you just put a thing of spray paint in it and you could just walk and spray at the same time. And so when you saw him with that out and he starts making laps and you kind of peek out the window and it's a beautiful sunny Saturday, probably even before an Ohio State game was about to kick off, all right, we got to get our game in first. And, yeah, you knew it was going to be a fun day, but that was one of the fun things about him. He'd be setting up bases to play baseball, and we'd have a lot of our friends over, and obviously our parents were friends with other parents that had kids around the same age. So a lot of times it would be a bunch of kids over, and he'd be all-time quarterback, or he'd be, pitching to us. We'd be playing baseball and all kinds of whatever other games you could think of in a yard.
Well, man, I love that. Yeah, like he started you at a very young age. Like you were little when all that was happening, right?
Yeah, very little. And a lot of times it would be my dad and I because I was the youngest, versus my two older brothers. And it'd be like, two-on-two football. And, he'd be drawing plays up on his hand. We'd break the huddle. He'd say, you're going to run here, do this, do that, and come this way, and I'll throw you right here. Oh. But, it was serious. It was serious business. You learn that, this was serious and we're trying to win,
So that competitiveness was built into you early. That fire was built into you early because as you progressed in your game, you ended up moving away from our hometown. You ended up moving to a neighboring town called Wauseon, Ohio. And that's where you got involved in football, more organized football outside of the stuff that your dad would introduce you to in the backyard, which then progressed you on to this amazing high school athlete that was recruited by numerous Division I schools and then it went on to Michigan. I'm going to say it again. Michigan Wolverines. Michigan Wolverines. Yes. Okay, I'm saying it. And then after that, you played for the New Orleans Saints for a bit. And then you also participated in the Arena Football League, too. So you've had a really pretty cool career. But now living in LA, we were just talking before I hit the record, you are pursuing acting. And the latest is stand-up comedy that you're doing, which I think is brilliant. That's got to be hard, though.
Yes. Yeah. It's extremely hard. I'd rather play football in front of 110,000 people than, do stand up for 20 people. Sometimes it's very nerve wracking, but I can say when you get up and you get a few people to laugh, even if you can just get a few people to laugh, it's like a drug or something. It's like, I can't sleep at night. I'm like, what an adrenaline rush that was. And that's probably the reason, acting's very similar.
Yeah,
I always describe it or relate it to football and the idea that in some weird way, I enjoy the nervousness, the stress and the adrenaline rush that you get from football. It's hard to recreate that, obviously, but the closest thing is, somebody says hike and you hike a football. Well, somebody says action and you do the scene, as an actor. And there's that, you don't know what you have plans. You have your playbook or you have your script. Kind of have a plan, but how is it going to go? Is it going to go exactly how you drew it up? Probably not. And that's where the magic's at. And it's fun to have that interaction with, other actors. And obviously when you're playing football, to be playing with people and that special moment that you can all get on the same page and create something. And it's fun. So that's one of the reasons I love acting. And now with stand up, it's very similar. And with acting, you can maybe do a redo cut and say, let's try it this way. But with stand up, you're writing your own stuff, you're preparing. Yeah. And you go up on the mic, up on the stage, and you're like, I hope other people laugh at what I think is funny.
Right.
And it's been a fun experiment.
For sure. And I love what you just related, the football to the acting, in terms of you have your plan, but you don't know how it's going to go. You just kind of have to roll with it. And you are as prepared as you can possibly be as an athlete for your game and how you train and all the levels and all the things that you do. And in acting, you are prepared by knowing the script and knowing what the direction and everything's happening. But then, when that happens, there's lots of different things that can happen. Wow.
Yes.
I would have never thought about it like that, but that's awesome. So Elliot Mueller, welcome to the show. That was like the longest introduction I'm sorry I've ever done.
Oh, it's great. It's great.
But
it's good to just dive in.
You'll find that I tend to do that. Yeah. I tend to just let's just dive in and talk. I'm so, so, so glad that you agreed to have a conversation with me today, because all the great accolades that you've had, have ultimately been formed by an experience that you had when you were a senior in high school. And that was Christmas Eve, 2007, I believe it was. There was an automobile accident that yourself and your family was involved in that really changed a lot of things for you and changed probably your perspective on life more than anything, I would have to imagine. That automobile accident happened to take the life of your father, take the life of your girlfriend, your very serious girlfriend. And it also paralyzed your older brother from the waist down in that accident. You tore your shoulder, I know, from what your mom has talked to me about, trying to free your brother from the wreckage where he was trapped. And 6 months, you're supposed to move to Ann Arbor, Michigan and play football for a prestigious football program. I just going back and thinking about everything that traversed on that evening and the stuff that you experienced and the process that you had to go through to get you to be an athlete, be on your own, move away from that and heal as much as possible as a then 17, 18 year old. I mean,
yeah, it's definitely, in hindsight, you're able to kind of look back on it and figure out how life has changed and kind of what things what things got you through it, and you know, and even me personally, there's certain things that I, you know, in a way you wish you could change with the, just like life in general, you wish, I've got this knowledge now, I wish I would have known that this was going to happen, or I know that, you know, hey, if I did this, you know, like one big thing for me was, it's obviously a pivotal moment anytime. I mean, for anybody that's gone through a tragedy like that, and something that you can't prepare for, it's a pivotal moment in your life. And whether you like it or not, you have a completely different outlook on life, and you see how fragile life is. You know, it makes you cherish memories and moments, and you know, yet at the same time, it's you're in so much pain going through something like that, that the very memory of the people that you've lost is haunting in a way. And so you just, it's one of those things you wish you could fix and you can't. And yeah, just there's really no words to describe it. But over the years, I've learned that so many people that have seen the E60 episode about our story, so many people have shared their tragedies, their things, and it's all relative, you know. I somebody's, you know, lost a loved one, or I've heard story, not that you can compare tragedies like that, but I've just heard stories where I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe something like that happened to you. And you know, our story was one night. I've heard people that have had just their, maybe even their entire lives have been, you know, a list of tragedies, and you hear it, but they'll say, I saw your E60, and it just, it gave us hope. It gave us inspiration. It gave us encouragement to keep pushing, to get through it. It put a smile on our face. You know, even my barber told me the other day, he said that, you know, he watched it and he just was floored. And he's met Brock. Brock's been out to visit me, and I've taken Brock there to get a haircut. But, you know, he mentioned it. He's like, oh my God, I just, it's so sad. And yet at the same time, it was so happy at the end. And I think that's why we did it. And that's what it's all about, really, is to, you know, even doing a podcast like this is to show people that, you know, it's still, you know, horrifying for me to even think about. And it's, you know, you never really get over it. You have a hole in your heart for the rest of your life, but there's still life after something like that. There's still hope. There are still good times. And there's, you know, maybe even more so, more reason for me to live and to just maximize my life. And that's the whole point of the miracle at Michigan, the E60 episode. The whole point, I think, for me is to encourage people that, hey, we've been through this, but this is what can happen if you are willing to fight back and you know, I guess try to regain your life and you know,
When do
yeah,
you
so.
think for you, as a person, because everybody heals and traverses through tragedy and all the challenges the way that they do, the way that they process, because we're all different. When do you feel that you got to a point where you felt like, I have that fight back? I feel like I can fight back.
I'd say that's a difficult question to answer, because there are still times today where I wonder if I can fight back, you know? And I think that's kind of like what I said. I feel like you always have that hole in your heart, and whether you like it or not, your life is forever changed. You view life in a different way. There's really nothing, no book you can read, or even therapy was very helpful for me, but it's always going to be something that has happened to you and something that you went through. And but I think it's just been an ongoing fight for me. And I think the best answer for me, like you said, I had to move to Ann Arbor 6 months later and go to college. In many ways, I didn't want anything to do with football. I was like, football? Who cares about a game? And the amount of work and effort that it takes is sometimes I don't even know how I got through that. And, you know, luckily for me, I had such amazing teammates and people around me. It's, it made all the difference. But the reality was for me was that football, it's like on one hand, you don't want to play it. You don't even care about it. And on the other hand, football was the thing that allowed me to escape. It allowed me to be in a place where I could actually search for my passion for it again, to really dig deep and find, why did I even like football? And, you know, you start to examine your life and think back to when your dad was spray painting the yard, and the simple aspect of it, of playing with your brothers, playing with your dad, you know, mom's watching and your friends are coming over, whatever it may be. That's where it all started. And so you have to kind of dig deep and say, you know what, this is maybe something that's bigger than me. And I'm surrounded by these teammates and even, you know, more so just, I think, you know, God really got me through it. And that's a whole nother, maybe a whole nother podcast episode, but I had so many reasons why I felt God was calling me to Michigan, and, pretty much none of them had to do with football, and I didn't find that out till later. So,
I think that's one of the most intriguing things. And I would invite everybody that's listening to this to tune into that, the miracle episode that we're talking about. We'll put that link as well up for when we release this podcast and this talk, because the basis for a lot of your healing, I would say, had to do and revolve around how all that, I'm going to just call it a God thing that just dropped. Because with you being a higher level athlete, being recruited by numerous Division I programs, your dad and your hope was that you would go to Ohio State. That was going to be the thing to do, right? And when Michigan called and DeAndre Mom said, I think we need to probably look at this. Yeah. Okay. All right. You did. It fit. Here we go. You would have no idea how pivotal that decision would be just a year down the road, 2 years down the road for you. Because without that, it would have changed the trajectory for your brother and for your entire family.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, like I said, in hindsight, it had everything to do with not football. You know, at the time as a recruit, and it's funny, I look back on it but that's what makes it such a beautiful story in the end, is that when I was a recruit, you know, I was meeting with my pastor. I was really conflicted because the young Elliot wanted to go to Ohio State. And yet every time, you know, there were many factors involved. Coach Tressel was awesome. His brother recruited me. It was a dream come true.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, they kind of had their offensive linemen set up. They already had their guys committed. They were nice to me and treated me great, but they were just kind of like, yeah, we like you.
Yeah.
Whereas Michigan, on the flip side, we love you. What do we have to do to get you?
Yeah.
You should only be visiting here. Don't visit any other schools. What are you doing? You know, they were above and beyond. And on top of that, like I said, I was meeting with my pastor, and there were so many little moments that I had throughout the recruiting journey that, you know, make no mistake, it was God speaking to me. And I got made fun of as a recruit on, you know, the recruiting websites, because they're like, recruit says God tells him to go to Michigan. Like, this guy's, you know,
wait,
this guy's out of his mind kind of thing. Because I was very outspoken about it, I feel, you know, because it was it's a big deal. Ohio State, Michigan, this whole thing. And I just said, you know, I really feel a calling on my heart to go to Michigan. And like I said, my pastor and I would meet and different, just all kinds of different things would happen where it was like, I would pray and God would clearly answer the prayer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Elliot wants to go to, you know, for those, you know, for those that have faith, it's like the flesh wants to go to Ohio State, but you know, God is really calling me to go to Michigan. And on top of that, I fell in love with Ann Arbor. I fell in love with the staff and all these. But anyways, the whole point saying in all of that is there were so many reasons to go to Michigan. And as a recruit, I thought it was going to deal with football, and come to find out, you know, it was the perfect opportunity for simply put, my family to heal and to give Brock an opportunity, more specifically Brock an opportunity to heal.
Yeah.
And way bigger than football. And you can't make that up. It's like, I look back and I see God's hand on it all. And I'm just like, I'm very thankful.
Yeah. So let's follow that timeline, because the accident happened in 2007 as you're a senior. And Brock, your older brother, he was at Ohio State at that point?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I think he was already a junior, maybe.
Okay.
Junior or senior.
Okay. So he was already a student at Ohio State when the accident happened and it paralyzed Brock from the waist down. The rehabilitation and the surgery and the whole process that he had to go through was immeasurably huge, just as you can only imagine. And when you found out that there were, what, a handful of rehabilitation hospitals that really were the best ones to deal with the injury that he had, and you find out that one is in Ann Arbor, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, okay, well, you're already there. You had just started there. So your brother's going to join you.
Mm-hmm. Well, he really technically, beat me to getting up there. So I don't remember the timeline exactly, but I think it was, within a month or two of the accident that he, was at Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think, as far as football goes, Lloyd Carr had retired and I had started to get recruited by some schools again that were like, Lloyd Carr is going to retire. We don't know who Michigan's going to get.
Yeah.
You should come to Michigan State or you should come to Illinois. And I was kind of partly entertaining it. My dad, told me, he goes, no, you committed to Michigan. You gave him your word. You're going to Michigan. And I think part of it was like, we just got all this Michigan stuff. Got rid of the Ohio State t-shirts or whatever. we're not going through this again, but he one of his last things to me was, you chose Michigan and it was beyond who was the coach, even though that was a big factor. It's like, you chose it for the tradition. You fell in love with Ann Arbor. You're going to a storied program that, many different reasons, but, so anyways, I was going to Michigan regardless mm-hmm. of who they hired.
Yeah.
They end up hiring Rich Rodriguez right around, the same time that the accident happened. And so anyways, by the time Brock, ends up in the hospital up in Michigan, they probably hadn't been on campus, maybe weeks, a few weeks.
Right.
And so one of their first things was to visit Brock. And I say they, I'm talking Rich Rodriguez, the head coach, and Mike Barwis, the guys who would ultimately end up training Brock, mm-hmm. even though all they knew was that, hey, one of your recruits' brothers is here at the hospital. We'll send some players up, some coaches to meet with them. And so anyways, all that to say is, who could have known that the people that didn't even recruit me, I think Brock might've even met them before I did. And so,
oh my gosh, he met your coaches before and your athletic trainer before you did.
I think so. Yeah. And at that time, again, your mindset is pretty much, I don't really give a damn about football at this point. So whoever's going to, I don't even know what's, happening in my life right now. So
yeah,
wasn't exactly a high priority, but they made sure to come visit. And, mm-hmm. And so anyways, who knew that the moment they got hired, that this relationship was going to start with this Brock Mueller kid. And I think it was maybe a year later when Brock really started to get, movement in his legs, and all of a sudden this kind of like, hey, maybe we really can, build something here. He's moving his feet. And
yeah.
And then the whole relationship with Mike started. And,
I love that, by the way, because as I'm watching that, the character of your athletic trainer, Mike, that you're talking about, was just no nonsense, foundational. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to make happen. It's what I am committing to this. And when I say committing to that, your brother was at a point where he had to leave that specific hospital and move on to something different. And because of that relationship that was built by those coaches that reached out to your family in need at a really, really low point for everyone. It was, it's beautiful to think about, because they took your brother on as another athlete. They took him on as another athlete.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think the way I remember it, they obviously met him shortly, you know, after the accident when he was up at Michigan. And I think it was, you know, just trying to reach out and be supportive. And I don't know that there was any conversation of like, we're going to get you walking again, because he, you know, was in really bad shape at that point. But the way I remember it was he had come, that's why I say a year later, he was up at a spring practice where I, you know, had been at Michigan for a year. And we're walking out to practice. Brock is still in a wheelchair, and we're going through the weight room as we're walking out to practice. And I say we, I think my mom was there, and Brock and my brother Blake and his wife and so on. And so the way I remember it was that Mike saw him then. It was like, hey, you know, how's, you know, they knew each other, whatever, but how are you, you know, what's going on? What's going on here? And he's like, well, you know, I can move my legs, and I, you know, I'm starting to get feeling, and I'm starting to get all these things were starting to come back slowly, but surely, progressively, he was getting more and more. And so I just remember Mike being like, come over here and hop on this, you know, this ball. He goes, if you want to walk again, we got to build your core up. You got to have a strong core to be able to balance and hold yourself. Get over here. And I was just like, what? Good luck with that.
What I'm gonna go
practice because I knew what Brock was getting into. And anyways, it made me laugh. You know, but that's, to me, that is where I don't think Brock came out to practice. You know, he's in jeans and a jacket.
he comes back in
and he's drenched in sweat, you know, the way I understood it was just that it was a challenge of, I don't know how to make someone walk again, but I do know the human body. And Mike is, that's why I say it's such a God thing. I mean, there's so many layers to it and moments and people, but Mike is not only the best at what he does, but he's also so humble to be willing to say, I'm willing to learn. I'm always willing to learn. I'm always willing to research. And even though we're doing it this way now, maybe something will say that this way is not the best.
Right.
We'll try it this way. And so to get somebody like Brock and say, I don't know the human body, I don't know how to make someone walk, but I know the human body.
Right.
If you're willing to put in the work, I'm willing to do everything we can to get you to walk again, and kind of an experiment, but like, I think I can do it.
Yeah.
And Brock's like, all right. And that's where it began. And
the it beginning for him was him actually walking across the field on a season opener, right?
Yeah, I think that would have been, you know, about a year and a half later, maybe.
Right.
He's better with the specifics on that, but I think it would have started, if it started in that spring, it would have been about a year and a half later. I think that, that he took the field and, you know, was challenged, but it's just amazing. 'Cause I can remember, you know, Brock would just be able to just being in his wheelchair and being able to just kind of fling his right foot. And it would just kind of, he just kind of kick it and drop. And you're just like, oh my God, this is incredible. And then it would be, he could hold it up and then it would go down again and hold it. And all of a sudden he's starting to build up some strength. And then that's when he starts training with Mike. And, you know, they had him to the point where it's, you know, we're not going to let you bring the wheelchair into the building. You have to crawl in here.
Oh my.
So how does a baby learn to walk? A baby learns by crawling. And it was kind of like, okay. And, you know, it was at the point where they let him bring the wheelchair to the doors of the weight room and he'd have to crawl in from there. And then it was, now we're not going to let you bring it into the building. He'd crawl in through the building. And then it turned into eventually, you know, you need to get rid of the wheelchair, period, and not even have it as an option. And like I said, Brock, and I'm sure he's got more specific stories, but you know, for me watching that and Brock, I mean, the workouts, you could almost argue his workouts were more brutal, because I mean, they were pushing him. They were treating him like one of the players, and but his workouts, you know, were to get him to walk again. It's like there's way more at stake here. And so I think in many ways they really pushed him to the limit, and Brock never complained, never quit, never missed a workout. I just, to this day, I'm just blown away at his work ethic and what he did, and I just think of myself and I think, God, there had to be days where it's just like, not today. I can't. I'm tired. Right. This and that. I don't want to make the drive.
Right.
And he showed up every time. And yeah.
You know, that's a testament though to your dad that raised you. You know, if I think back to that as a parent, the things that you want to instill in your kids is that drive and that motivation and that no excuses and that, and you know, don't back down from a challenge. Like, give it your all. If you commit to it, give it your all. I mean, you committed to your process and look where you landed in a great program that, again, was everything that you're explaining. It's just such a God thing. And that you would not know. I think it was really interesting. It's like the flesh wanted this, but yeah, but God had other intentions. And I think that is such a huge testament to the fact that we have such a hard time releasing expectations around certain things. But I want to know a little bit more about how you felt as, and you talk about being blown away by his determination and his work ethic. Tell me what you felt when you, your older brother, Blake, Brock, and your mom walked across that football field on that opening day to what, 113,000 people?
Yeah. I think it was a record at the time. Yeah.
Oh gosh.
It was incredible. And I was very split because I was a player. And so I was trying to mentally, probably for selfish reasons, mentally trying to keep my mind off of, because I was so nervous for Brock. I'm like, I got to focus on the game. I got to focus on the game. Cause I'm like, I'm about to go play a football game. I'm in, and I don't know whether to puke or cry. You know, I'm like, cause I was so nervous for him. And I know my mom was, and not that, you know, even if he had fallen, he knew how to get up, and there was a game plan that, okay, fall, the crowd's probably going to cheer even harder for you to get back up, and your brother's going to be there to help you. And, but yeah, I was just so nervous and so excited for him and, you know, proud of him.
Right.
And just, it really was a culmination of all the things that were happening behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. And there were obviously, it wasn't a secret that he was training with us, but day in, day out to see the work he was putting in and the things they were doing to him. And just, like I said, it was almost an experiment, you know, trying to figure out what do we got to do to push him to get him up again. And the fact that he did it is just blows my mind. But that moment walking out into the field with the people cheering, it was really unbelievable. And it was really for our family, I think, a healing moment to kind of
say,
I don't know how to say it, but almost like a strike back of saying, you know what, we got knocked down pretty hard and there's nothing that's going to change losing our loved ones, but you know, damn it, this is the best we can do here. And it's pretty good. It was awesome.
That culmination, like you said, of everything over the course of the previous years. Yeah. The knockdown that you guys all went through, that healing, your brother was that catalyst, but it had to be you, right? And your process that got to that point that you had no idea why this was such a space that you had to go to, you know, and why all these things were happening like this.
Yeah. It's, you know, I didn't really know it, you know, almost until after I left Michigan and could really look back. Cause I think while I was there, you know, you're so stressed out, you're so focused on football, you know, whether it's as an individual trying to earn a starting spot or impact the team and workouts to, you know, wanting the team to do well, all these different things. You're so focused in a 4 to 5 year period. But when I look back at it, I really see how much, and not to say the football aspect of it was great, but it wasn't the main reason. And so when I look back, I'm like, wow, as a recruit, and it's taught me a lot about life and about how God works. And I think sometimes, you know, you may see something, well, why is this happening? Or why is it got to go this way? And even if it's good, it's like, why is this happening to me? I think sometimes I don't know. I've heard it put described as, you know, you go through life and all the ups and downs in life and you just wonder why. And then when you really look back on it, you realize it's a finely crafted novel and everything sort of makes sense.
Yeah.
And I saw Joe Walsh of the Eagles say that, and so he's had a pretty wild life. But I that always struck me, and you know, I have a lot of life to live, obviously, still. But when I really look back at those years and the valleys, to put it lightly, I do look back and I think, geez, when I was being recruited and all these decisions and all these weird moments I had and all these, I mean, it really was a struggle as fan Elliot, fan of Ohio State. Mm-hmm. My childhood was Ohio State. Even my buddies, you know, I remember when I was in high school, when I started getting recruited, Miami, Ohio offered me, Toledo came to, you know, and offered me Bowling Green. That was awesome. It was so cool. I'm like, oh my God, I have a chance to play Division I football.
Yeah. Yeah.
My buddy said, what if Michigan sends you a letter? And that still seemed, even though that was always my dream to be recruit, go to Ohio State. And I believed it. It still wasn't reality yet. So I'm like, right. Michigan sends me something. If they send me a letter, I'll tear it up. And they go, okay, okay, we'll see. And fast forward, Michigan didn't send me a letter. They showed up at my school and they were the first, they were the first school of the Miamis and Bowling Greens and all these teams that are near me. Michigan was the first school to actually show up and look me in the eyes and say, we're recruiting you. And when that happened, my jaw hit the floor. They said, you said you'd rip it up. I go, well, they didn't send me a letter. I go, they showed up at my school.
Completely different situation. You know? Right?
But it really was a struggle for me. And yet, and it wasn't just me, you know, my family, my dad, my mom, Brock being a student at Ohio State, Blake, I even think took an uncle or two with me on visits. And I took Hollis so she could, you know, witness this stuff as well. I valued everybody's opinion around me.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be smart. And it's very exciting when you're a recruit, probably as your daughter knows, like you're getting, it's so exciting that you're, part of you is jumping at every, oh, did you hear that? They said they like me. Oh my God, I got to go here. And then the next place tells me, well, they said they love me. I got to go here. You get very excited and that's part of the process and you should enjoy those moments. But at the time for me, it was everyone seemed excited. But when I went to Ohio State, it just, and there was nothing outrightly bad. It just
didn't feel.
It didn't feel like home to me. It didn't feel right. In fact, almost everything felt wrong.
Wow.
I didn't necessarily want it to be that. I definitely didn't want it to be that way, but it was undeniable.
Yeah.
And, you know, to the point where even my dad, it turned into a thing where it was, we'll give him one more shot. We'll give him one. And every time, again, not that they were doing anything bad, but it just, every time I left disappointed and it was like, gosh, Michigan was the opposite. And it was almost like, even though I was just honored and it's so cool to be recruited by Michigan, I was like, is that what I want though? Like, why can't Ohio State do what Michigan's doing? And Michigan just kept delivering, doing everything right, visiting up there, the people, everything was like the opposite of Ohio State. It all felt right. And so you look back at that and it's,
all of that as a 16, 17, 18 year old young man. You know, I mean, you're in your formative years and having those experiences. I want to go back to something you said a little bit ago about being able to look back on kind of the nuts and bolts of everything and kind of look back on the experience as a whole and kind of be able to have some perspective about why certain things happen. Obviously, there's always going to be questions, like you said earlier, about why this had to happen. But in terms of you understanding the bigger picture of how things traversed for you, if you will, and the trajectory that your life took and therefore your family's life took, I think, gosh, I think that's a gift. And you're young yet. Yes, you have a lot of life to live, but that's, I think, a gift that not everybody gets in their life.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I think I think as we like to say, like, you know, out of the tragedy we lived through, there's, you know, still treasure. Like I said, there's still moments, there's still life to live. Brock touching the banner and all the great things that, you know, have all of us that were affected, all the great things that have happened in our lives individually.
Yeah.
You try to really look at those things and examine them and, you know, we still have, you still have bad times through life, like everybody does, where you're whatever it may be, you're sitting and you're kind of examining things and saying, and I'm always reminding myself of what I've been through and what I've experienced and saying, you know what? You're not maybe going to understand it right now.
Yeah.
You may not, even if it's something good, it's like, what can I learn here? What's God trying to teach me or calling me to? Mm-hmm. And, you know, ultimately just enjoy it, enjoy every moment that you have and, you know, make the most of it. And yeah, I cherish those memories as a recruit because I think I was so caught up and I think it's natural to be caught up in that it's football and so on. And I'm going to go to a play. I'm going to get in the NFL someday and all these things.
Right.
I look back and I'm so thankful that it wasn't about football because football is about that much of my life. And
Right. Yeah. Which is a whole other situation. It's you talk about football not being your identity. And I think most every college athlete crosses that or encounters that, whether they cross that and deal with it or not is a whole other situation. But I think every collegiate athlete at some point, either before, during, or immediately thereafter will say they've had to navigate that their sport is not who they are. It's not their identity. I think it's interesting that this whole experience for you and your family gave you such a perspective about that identity. It sounds like at a very, very early point for you in your career.
Yeah, definitely. It's such a struggle as, you know, especially when you're in college, you're at a big time program. You are doing, you know, I mean, jobs are at risk if you're not, you know, successful. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's a lot of pressure, and I think it becomes, and don't get me wrong, it's a lot of fun as well, but so much pressure to perform at your highest level. And like I said earlier, you know, competition's great. You want it to, it brings out the best in people. And so I really cherish it, but just in hindsight, having gotten out of college and, you know, football's behind me, so to speak, I just realized all the other reasons that I went to Michigan and all the other reasons that football was, you know, something God put in my heart from a young age. You know, I can remember being a kid. Gosh, I must have been, I don't know, 9 years old, 10 years old, maybe. I mean, maybe even younger. But I can remember sitting around with my dad and he was folding laundry. I'll never forget it. And I was like, how am I going to play for Ohio State and the Cleveland Browns when I can't play football? I knew that my brothers weren't able to play football.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why at that age, but I just knew that they weren't, you know, it's like, well, your school doesn't have football, but I had cousins that had school. I was like, how am I going to do that? And it's like, and I never forget my dad telling me, you will. And I don't know what, you know, how he knew that, but he was so encouraging. And I've never forgotten that, but he was just very casual about it. You will. And, you know, a couple, you know, whatever it was, 2-3 years later, we end up moving to, you know, Wauseon, and I have the opportunity. I mean, shoot, I think before I was even fully enrolled into school, it was like we were getting signed up in the football program.
Oh, I love it.
And, but, you know, I think back to that, and I think God put that on my heart at a very young age. And again, was it about football? A little bit, yes. I enjoyed football. It was great, and it opened up many, many doors for me and great experiences. But at the end of the day, it was much bigger than football. Right. And I'm so thankful for that. And even now in my career now, it's like the connections that I have because of Michigan and different people I meet out here in LA that are Michigan people, or, hey, I know a Michigan guy, or, wow, you played at Michigan. Okay. And it has opened so many doors up for me in what has ultimately become my career, where football, like I said, is this small window.
Yes.
And you can't play it forever, but you can use it to open up doors for you later in life.
It was your vehicle.
Yeah.
It was your vehicle to get you to where you are. And like, I don't want to like make it sound like you're carrying the weight of your family and the tragedy that you all had to go through, but it's almost like you were the one that paved this way for this healing process to happen. And everybody in your family had these beautiful pieces you are all such an integral piece of that healing process for you. And football being about that much, right? Just that small opening of that door. Again, just a really, really great God thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so thankful for it because, like you said, my family, I may have been the guy that went to Michigan, but my family was such a huge part of it. My dad instilling the love for football in me and hard work and the passion for it. I mean, really almost through osmosis, watching him, how fired up, you know, we'd go to my uncle's and, you know, be watching an Ohio State game and his basement. I mean, they're throwing their hats and yelling and stomping around, and you kind of learn like, all right, this is the way this is how I should be doing it, you know? And we're mad. I'm not sure. I'm just a little kid. I'm not mad. I don't know what I'm mad about, but I'm mad, you know, and I'm yelling at the TV and then my mom, you know, she was always, very out of the box thinker, very, you know, if you have a dream, you go for it. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how crazy it sounds or what other people might think, you're going to do it. And it just, she's so casual about, you know, it just is natural to her that you're like, okay. And then my brothers, you know, they were sports legends in my eyes growing up as a kid. You're just, Blake and Brock were such great, you know, specifically basketball where they're sports. And I just looked up to them as a kid, and to have my brothers to look up to and really set the bar to say, all right, I want to be, I mean, gosh, my freshman year of high school, I almost quit football because I wanted to focus on basketball because my brothers, that's what we do. We're basketball guys, you know? I had brothers that were, you know, so good at basketball and kind of setting that tone of the importance of sports. And so I was just very blessed with my family to, all the little roles that they played in my life and still do, but really paved ways and inspired me and always encouraged me. Even as crazy as it was going through school as a little kid, I still have little books from fifth grade. I'm going to play football at Ohio State, you know, I'm going to go be an actor, you know? And so from a young age, I had those beliefs, and nobody in my family ever doubted it for a second or tried to tell me I couldn't do it. And, you know, you go through school. That's why anytime I see a kid in school, it doesn't matter if he's a string bean, a little kid, he goes, I want to play football at Michigan. I'm like, well, you can do it, you know? And that's what I had a lot of support, and oftentimes it came from people outside of my family who are like, you can't do it. Are you crazy? You're going to play at Ohio State, you know? And just because people don't really do that. And so, My family was always so supportive, and I had, you know, other people in my life throughout the years that were so supportive. And again, I just look back at it all, and I'm thankful for the vehicle of football. I'm thankful that it was on my heart at a young age, and yet it had nothing to do with football. So it's a beautiful story, really.
It truly is. I want to say there is a quote that, that was mentioned in Miracle, and it was your dad's saying, if you don't have good dreams, you'll have nightmares.
Yeah.
Like, tell me a little bit about how that echoes what it was that you just said, because like the dreams that you talk about your parents being so casual about their belief. It's just like innate. It's a very, very, it's a no brainer. You want to do it? It's available. Go get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, like I said, it was, you know, and it came, I was also aware that it came at a cost. Like my dad and mom would both be, you know, all right, well, you're going to have to work for it. And like I said, my mom was always the out of the box thinker kind of, you know, well, yeah, you're going to play college football, but like what NFL team are you going to end up on? And that kind of thing where, you know, and it was just, it came off so, you know, like, yeah, like I said, natural that you really do believe it as a kid growing up. It's all right. Let's, you know, let's go for it. But yeah, that quote that my dad always used to tell me, and like I said, I cherish all these little memories because it was before I was recruited. It was before, you know, even though I knew it on my heart and my parents knew it and all these things, it was like, you know, they really knew it. And my dad just go for it. If you don't have good dreams, you're going to have nightmares. And the funny thing about that quote too is, and again, another God moment, but it's from the movie Diner.
Okay.
And Mickey Rourke says it. And Steve Guttenberg is in the movie as well. When I moved to LA, the first person I met in LA was a guy I was connected to through a Michigan teammate, but he's neighbors with Steve Guttenberg. I end up meeting Steve Guttenberg and I you know, he gives me a lot and still to this day gives me a lot of great advice with acting and different things. Mm-hmm. But when we first met, he gives me all this great advice. We met, we grabbed coffee. He's the greatest guy. But as we're walking away, I just said, hey, by the way, I just wanted to tell you, my dad used to share this quote with me and he cut me off. He goes, I read the story. I know about the quote. That is incredible. And he knew how special it was that this quote was something my dad used to say. And here I am meeting one of the guys from the movie. And then fast forward, I signed up about a year ago for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at the gym down the street. My first day at Jiu-Jitsu, Mickey Rourke is in there doing Jiu-Jitsu.
Oh my gosh.
And so I'm like, this is insane to me. So
that's crazy. Anyways,
you know, and he's the one that says the line, but that's where my dad got that line. But he really, he believed it. And, you know, he would say it with a determination, a sternness about it. Like, have those dreams, but like, what are we going to do? Get outside, shoot your free throws, you know, jump your rope, lift your weights, whatever it was. He was always pushing me and to be prepared that there would be a day that would come when I would be recruited. And are you going to be ready?
Be ready. Be ready to walk through that door when that opportunity approaches for you. Yeah. Exactly. Do you feel like there are those angels are around you? Your girlfriend and your father?
Yeah, I definitely do. You know, I was just talking about it earlier today, but I call it winks from God. I have all these moments that have happened and all these stories that I write down in my journal that have happened to me on my journey through life. And it's undeniable that, you know, God's fingerprints are on my life. And, but I always call them God winks when I have these moments that just are kind of ways of, you know, they're maybe not anything specifically impactful, but running into Mickey Rourke, maybe, you know, something like that, where I just have to laugh and say, you know what, God's telling me I'm on the right path. I'm doing the right thing. I'm where I should be.
Right.
If nothing else. And, but yeah, I, you know, not a day goes by that I don't think of my dad and Hollis and, you know, they're no doubt, on the journey with me and, yeah, I just, I think of them often and I definitely have moments where I feel like they're winking at me too. And, so yeah, I cherish moments like that. And like I said, I not a day goes by, I don't think about them. And, and it's at a point now where it's very encouraging for me to think about them. And, inspiring for me and wanting to make the most of my life and what life I have. I want to make the most out of it because I realize it could be gone tomorrow. It could be gone at any minute.
Yeah.
And I want to make the most of my life for my dad, for Hollis, for my family, who still to this day is so supportive of me. And, and if, you know, and to also inspire other people to go for their dreams and, you know, I always say that one of the greatest gifts, if not the greatest gift someone can give you is belief.
Yes.
And I've had it throughout my life where people have looked me in the eyes and say, I believe in you. And sometimes when you don't even believe in yourself and, it's just always been so valuable to me. And, like I said, I think of my dad and Hollis all the time and how much they believed in me and, in many ways, my life, I try to live it in a way that would make them proud.
Yeah. Do you feel that's probably one of your biggest blessings to date, having gone through everything you've gone through at this point?
Well, I think it's, Is that belief? Yeah, I think to me, it definitely is the encouragement that I had. And like I said, I think about my dad and Hollis all the time. Every day I think about him at some point. And sometimes it's something I can laugh at. Sometimes it's something that makes me want to cry. Sometimes it's a lot of the times it's some funny story or something that I think of. And I cherish those moments because as the years go by, you start to forget what they were like. And you really think about, you know, I have friends that will tell me, remember the time that your dad, I just had a buddy do this the other day. Remember the time your dad, we were at a Wendy's, I guess. And he put on the Wendy's, I guess they had a wig or something, the white, the red, the pigtails, you know, that Wendy's has. And he, take a picture of me. I do not remember that, but that sounds like something he would do, you know.
Yeah.
He wanted a photo. And one of my buddies from high school was telling me, oh, that was the funniest thing in the world. How do you not remember? And I go, I guess I don't. But you know, you learn to cherish those memories. And so I don't know where I was going with that, but the belief that they had in me is like I said, one of the greatest gifts, if not the greatest. And I remember that for any time I want to encourage other people, how much it really means to have someone that, especially someone that knows you, say, no, you can do it. I've seen you do it. I know you can do it. I believe in you. And it's a very powerful thing.
Yeah. Well, as the memories diminish, as the years go by, I think one of the things that really strikes me from everything you've said so far is that belief in you and that support and that drive that, yes, you're going to do it. Yeah. Is just stronger. It's just growing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you even categorize that? How do you even categorize that?
Yeah, that's where I say like the winks from God, and sometimes it's, feels like winks from my dad and Hollis.
Yeah,
where it really does feel like they're on the journey with me, and it goes back to the days when I was recruited. Like I said, I'd get made fun of on some recruiting sites. This guy says God's telling him to go to Michigan. Are we serious right now? You know. And for me, I'm like, I know how insane it sounds, believe me. and in some ways at the time, you know, I had my struggles where I'm like, God, could you please give me a sign to go to Ohio State? Like, why is everything awesome at Michigan? Why do I love Michigan? Like, this isn't the way it was supposed to go, you know? So, I know how crazy it sounds, but I still have those moments now. Like I said, everything that I can look in hindsight, looking back, everything that's happened to me, there's no question in my mind of God's hand on it. And so I remind myself of that now. And so when I have those moments, I'm like, I may not understand why this is happening, but I can tell God's letting me know I'm on the right path. And even in the down times, he lets me know that he's with me. I have the stuff that's happened to me in life has been something I can use now to say, like, all right, you didn't know what was going on then, but it worked out for you.
Right.
Let's keep trusting and having faith in God's
trusting.
Making it happen.
Trusting. I mean, you were asked at a very young age to trust the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about trusting your process. Yeah.
Yeah.
As you age, what a beautiful gift in the face of tragedy that you had to go through. And what a beautiful gift of trust and faith and a really, really good perspective, you know? And I think for anyone hearing this, it's not diminishing your experience and what your family had to endure and the days that are low, that are still happening, that still occur for all of you, I'm sure. It's rather looking at the other side of the coin and understanding that how fundamental the faith is for you and the trust in that process and how it all transpired to get to a point to bring all of you more full, more whole in the face of tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, you're really reminded of how precious life is,
Yeah.
And, you know, you may not remember it every day, but I have time, probably so many times where I might think, well, this isn't working out, or I had an audition. I can't tell you how many times I get an audition for a football player and I don't get a callback for it. I'm like, I'm the guy, you know, at least a callback, at least give me one more chance. Like, I feel like I know this role. And, but you know, I remind myself that, you know, you have to enjoy the journey, and the journey is the destination. And I just, I think all the time I remind myself, be happy, be present.
Yes.
Life can be much worse. And, you know, God doesn't design us to live in fear, or live in this place of, like I said, I'll always have a hole in my heart. And I've accepted that, you know, it's not necessarily that you heal, but that you just accept that you have this hole in your heart where these people, you know, your lost loved ones. And, but knowing that, I'm able to move forward and really enjoy the present moment and try to make the most of my life that I possibly can with, like I said, you just never know. Shoot, just this morning, I got horrible news that one of my teammates from Michigan passed away last night from colon cancer. And
I'm so sorry.
Craig Rowe, he was just, I mean, he's younger than me, and I just completely shocked. I mean, there's really no words when you hear something like that, but I just, and yet I think he was a guy who, you know, I wasn't extremely close to him, but I even played pro ball with him. We were roommates, when we played pro ball for a little while. And he was a guy that always had a smile on his face and played football at 100,000,000%. He always gave everything he had. He always had a real smile on his face and a strong faith in God. And I don't know. I just, you know, that just obviously happened this morning that I heard that. And I think it's a reminder to me that, you know, Craig lived with a real passion in life. Craig seemed to just be always, you know, he used to say turned up. He was always really, I mean, he really was that way. And so I don't know, you know, I don't know what it all means, but I think of Craig and I think of how passionate he lived in life. And, and it's just one more opportunity for me to remind myself, you don't know when your life's going to end. You don't know what valleys are coming or even peaks that are coming, great moments. So always be prepared and just to be present and to enjoy every second that you have and to make the most of it.
Yeah. The journey is the destination, you said. I love that. Truer words have been spoken. Yeah. The journey is the destination. And the people that are along the ride on our journey can be such the inspirations for us to continue moving forward and continue staying in the present, continue trusting our process by being examples of just being the human beings that are living that mission, if you will. Like they're living that out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I like to think of that. The journey is the destination all the time. Especially when I reflect back on Michigan too, I think of sometimes I was, you know, and obviously had just gone through a crazy, you know, crazy moment in my life, a terrible tragedy. But I think a lot of my years at Michigan, it was just so stressful trying to heal and trying to pursue something in football and just being caught up in this, almost where you can't mentally just check out and examine your life for a second and say, can I just get a break here? And, but at times I wish, and I had a lot of great times at Michigan, but sometimes I look back and I wish, you know, I wish I would have just been present and enjoyed the moment. And it's not to say I didn't have times like that, but I look back and I'm like, man, I wish I would have relaxed a little bit and not been so focused on, you know, whatever, you know, trying to get the starting spot or trying to improve here, try to do this. It's like, it's again, another opportunity for me to remind myself now when I don't get the audition or I don't book the job or what am I doing? You know, what am I going to do to get another audition or to get an opportunity? It's like, calm down. You are living what you're supposed to. This right here, right now is the moment that you should be enjoying mm-hmm. the season and just be happy that you have the opportunity mm-hmm. to pursue yeah. these things that you want to pursue. And right. so, yeah, I'm constantly reminding myself of that all the time, actually. Yeah. So,
and the God winks that happen along the way are just those really validating pieces for you.
Yeah, it's a little nudge to keep you, you know, moving forward. And mm-hmm. like I said, there's it's all relative. But for me as an actor, you're constantly, how do I get this audition? How do I book the job? What do I need to change? What do I need to improve on next time? And sometimes right. just when I need it most, I'll get a little wink from God of like, okay, you're on the right path. And that's how it's been with stand-up comedy. It's like Brock is actually the one that pushed me to do a fantasy camp put on by Jay Leno and Adam Carolla. And I was like, man, I don't really want to do stand-up comedy. That's never really been something. He goes, well, you should just, it's right. You live 5 minutes from where they're doing it. You should yeah. do it. And I'm like,
okay,
mate, you know, and come on, you know, if nothing else, it'll help you become a better actor. Just saying you went through it. Maybe you'll meet yeah. some people. And I go,
okay,
all right, I'll do it. And I signed up for it, you know, and now all of a sudden, 3-4 months later now, I'm going to open mics 3-4 times a week and,
yeah.
and trying to get booked on shows now and have built a set. And I love it. So it's like yeah. hilarious how that works, you know?
It's another really crazy metaphor for life that if we just trust the process and go with that flow and stay in our present, like staying in the present, that's another really huge piece. That's a huge yeah. takeaway for me. I mean, like you hear people say that, but I think that your story is so relatable to that aspect and that idea that it's just undeniable about the gift that being in your present and being in that moment and the trust that goes along with being in the present is possible. And it brings really, it brings beautiful gifts to your life that honor and recognize the people that may not be with you anymore. Yeah.
Absolutely. It definitely does. And I analyze this stuff all the time and think about it. And, you know, you're always, again, in my position, sometimes can get caught up and I got to get the next audition. When am I going to book the job? And once I book the job, I'll be able to whatever, you know, make X amount of money and then maybe get that new car, move to a new spot that I want to or whatever it is.
Right.
You're always on the hunt for the next thing and pushing. And that's not always bad to have that drive, but mm-hmm. sometimes you can get caught up in it. And then all of a sudden 7 years goes by and you're like, what have I been doing? I've been worried about what? And,
yeah.
And that's why the memories of, you know, all my memories, but specifically, you know, with my dad and Hollis, when I look back, some of the most enjoyable things in my life are thinking back to pranks my dad would pull on us. And I was just talking to my mom this morning about how my dad and Hollis had they had their own little kind of, I don't know, inside jokes. They were always giggling and doing, I'm like, what's the joke? You know, I don't get the joke, you know? And it's like, you wouldn't get it, you know? And it's just like, you know, and like my mom said, almost in a way that they, you know, knew they'd be going to heaven together at the same time. But I cherish that because my dad yeah. really did have a great relationship with Hollis and really Hollis's family and my family. I mean, you know, we'd go to the movies, we'd go bowling together. I don't know how many high school couples bring their parents with them to go and brothers and
to their bowling
day, and sisters, to go to the movies and different things like that. But we would do those things. And I've had a lot of awesome moments in my life and experienced some really great things. And yet some of my most cherished memories are sitting at home watching a movie with Hollis or with my dad and little stupid jokes we had and mm-hmm. quoting movies and things like that. And so knowing that, I think about that now and I think, don't get caught up in the rat race. Enjoy the people you're around, the people you're with.
Right.
And, you know, be present. Yeah.
Be present. Be present. Yeah. Elliot, man, gosh, this has been such a great time talking to you and hearing about your belief, hearing about your journey, hearing about your faith and everything that goes with it. I see that, that inspiration just oozing out of you. And I hope that people that are watching this can hear it because it's so present. Speaking about present in another direction. Yeah. Right? Yeah, it just really is. And I think that we have so much that we can teach one another. And I just want to say thank you so much for being so honest, open, and vulnerable with being able to talk about how a tragedy has turned your life into these miraculous little points. And how you find that balance and being honest enough to also know and say that it's not all okay. You know, there's days because we're human, yeah. You know? So that vulnerability is another really, really beautiful thing. So thank you for sharing all that with me today.
Yeah, of course. I appreciate you having me on, and a lot of times talking about this stuff, that's what I learned in therapy. You know, I would encourage anybody that has gone through tragedy. And like I said, it's always relative. I mean, I don't know, losing your job could be something that really upsets your life, you know, and or going through something like I did. And like I said, I've met people that have gone through, it sounds like their whole life has been a tragedy and somehow they're still pushing. And, but one thing I learned through going through therapy was that, I always felt like I had a dark cloud over me and there was nothing I could do about it because there's no replacing or bringing back Hollis or my dad. But going through therapy, I realized the dark cloud will always be there, but I can kind of put the dark cloud off in the distance if I need to. And maybe some days it comes back over and that's okay. But right. I can put the dark cloud over there, know that it exists. Yeah. I got a bright sunny sky over here and a lot of life to live. I just always encourage, I guess my point in saying all that is I sometimes enjoy talking about this stuff and then trying to, it's healing for me many times. And it's good to know that hopefully it can encourage some other people and, that are going through tough times.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's finding perspective, and it sounds like you are doing a wonderful job in navigating that in the present, you know, handling it when it comes.
Try.
Yeah. And that's all we can really do. That's really all we can do and work on that muscle, if you will. Right. Mm-hmm. And as we work on that muscle and it continues to develop, and the next time that cloud that you're talking about comes over, you're able to look at it differently, or you're able to nudge it over just a little bit easier for you to be able to go, all right, I'll come back to you. We'll deal with that later. Right now I'm having to focus here. And then your ability to be able to look at what was in that cloud is more manageable because you flexed that muscle. You've been working it. Yeah.
Exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, gosh, Elliot, I'm so again, so thankful that you were open to sharing your story. I want everybody to go and watch Miracle. And I'm going to put that link. It's an ESPN. Would you call it a short? It's not really a short. It's like an hour long.
It's a E60. I mean, that's the thing. We did they did like a 15-minute one. Then they did a 30-minute one. And they're like, you know what? I think we want to do a full hour and get the whole. So it's kind of a combination of those other episodes. And then filmed a bunch of stuff, but it's Miracle, and it's up on YouTube, and
it's great.
I'm always, to this day, meet people even out here in LA that have seen it and you know, are inspired by it and thankful to see it, and like I said, Brock walking out at the end, I think was a healing, I know it was a healing moment for our family. And just always want to encourage people that even when you feel like you've hit rock bottom, that there's more life to live and there is good that will still come in life. And sometimes you just got to fight for it.
Amen. Amen, brother. If I could fist pump you through the screen right here. Yes, there it is.
I got you.
Oh man, before I let you go though, I want to wrap up with, this is going to be fun. I want to wrap up with some rapid fire questions to kind of lighten it up a little bit and to show another side of your personality. And I think this is really going to be fun because you're with your stand-up comedy. Well, I can only imagine you're going to write a spiel about this talk and I'm going to be like the subject of a really funny, kind of a really interesting 10-minute shtick you're going to have on time.
Well, I told my mom recently. Told my mom recently, she's always calling me wanting to give me jokes. I go, you can write the jokes if you want, you know, but she cracks me up because she'll say, you know, hey, remember that one guy from Stryker, and he, you know, he was funny, right? And I'll just be like, okay, yeah. And what's the joke? And she goes, well, he's a funny guy, and you should put that in your stand-up. And I'm like, I don't know what the joke is, Mom. But this conversation with you, Mom, this is what I'm going to put in my stand-up. Yes, this is, and so she laughs, and so, but she's so, that's, you know, great. Wants to help me so much. And so it's so funny, having those conversations. But yes, I'm always looking for material.
Well, if I become material, you'll have to shoot me a text and I'll fly out and sit on the front row and be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. Well, I'm going to have 4 or 5 questions if you're good with that. Cool.
Yeah, sure. Okay. They're right. Rapid fire. So it's got to be quick answers. Or?
Yes, you got it. Well, okay. I mean, you can think about it for a little bit, but some of them are just going to be kind of like random stuff. All right.
Okay. I'll do my best.
Number one, here we go. What is your favorite type of weather?
Favorite type of weather? Fall. I love cool, crisp, leaves blowing. It's football season.
I was just going to say it's like being in the horseshoe, but that's wrong of me to say because
I'm in Ohio State. Yeah, it's more that late September feeling, early October. I love that.
All right, I got you. All right, number two, what is the stupidest dare that you ever agreed to?
Gosh, stupidest dare. Wow, that's a good question. I would have to say stupidest dare.
Maybe I've stumped you.
Probably ringing the sheriff's, doorbell in the middle of the night with my buddies when I was in high school.
Oh, that's a bad idea.
And then getting caught a few doors down.
Oh no. How old were you? You think, or roughly? Teenager?
15. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And getting like, I don't, if you're not from a tiny, small little town, like we're from, like, that's kind of a big deal. Like everybody, the sheriff probably knows everybody in your family.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. didn't make him any more happy. He was, after he scared the living daylights out of us, he was pretty gracious about it. So all things considered. So
it all ended.
Yes.
All right.
Very stupid looking back at it. I'm like,
it's okay. So what we do as teenagers. Yeah,
exactly.
All good. All right. Question number three. This is interesting because you're in LA. Would you ever appear on a reality show?
Probably, I wouldn't say never, but probably not.
Okay.
I think.
Any specific reason for you personally?
I think just me as an actor trying to pursue a career in acting is like, oh, here, there's that guy from Survivor.
Oh.
But you're trying to be, you know, you're in a TV show or a movie. It's like, isn't that the guy that won Survivor? You know,
I get it.
You would kind of screw yourself casting wise, but.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't think about that. That's a really valuable piece right there for sure.
Yeah. Not that it's impossible, but it's already hard enough to get acting jobs. It's like, I think that would probably, it'd be a lot of fun, but it'd kind of be like, all right, well, whether you win or lose,
that's what you're known as.
Go back to your job. Yeah.
You know, oh my gosh.
Be kind of tough.
Okay. Yeah. Number four, what was your last impulsive buy or impulsive purchase?
I mean, nothing big, but probably, I would have to say some sort of a fast food on Uber Eats that I shouldn't have been getting.
Oh no.
Probably.
What's your favorite fast food? What's your go-to food? Like fast food.
Chick-fil-A maybe.
Yeah. Let's go.
I'm a pizza guy too. There's some good pizza spots out here in LA. So
okay. All right.
That's usually my impulse buy.
is a good pizza.
I forgot to thaw something. I'll order some Uber Eats.
There we go. Yeah. That's definitely counts as an impulse buy. I will give you yes. that. Last question, and I'll let you go. And this might be just a little bit deeper than the others, but
sure.
What is your most strongly held belief about life, about you, about faith, about whatever the context for your journey has been?
Let's think. I would just say, I mean, it would have to be my faith in God. I think through all the ups and downs, like, you know, it kind of wraps up this whole thing, I guess. But like I've said a few times, I've seen God's fingerprints on my life, mm-hmm. the down times. I mean, wouldn't have been able to get through the down times without God. And so I would say, yeah, I guess my belief that he has good plans for me and, you know, shoot, even when I'm doing stand-up comedy, I just imagine Jesus standing next to me, like laughing at the jokes. I'm like, hopefully.
I love that.
Hopefully, you know, hopefully I could make Jesus laugh, you know? And so, but it does give me, it gives me a strength and a confidence in knowing that if I go up there and make nobody laugh, mm-hmm. I know that God wanted me to go up there and I'm going to learn something. And, you know, there's a great quote that I try. I'm a sucker for great quotes, but
okay, give me a good one.
I can't think of his name, but he was I almost want to say it's from a movie, but it was an Olympic sprinter. Chariots of Fire, maybe. Anyways, it doesn't matter. But the guy said, God made me fast, and when I run, I feel his pleasure. And so when I pursue, whether it was football or acting and what I'm doing now, I feel like when I pursue the calling that God has put on my heart, I feel his pleasure. And I don't know exactly where it's going to go. I don't know, you know, just like with football, maybe it didn't work out the way I planned, you know, be an NFL Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
But it worked out in even better ways than I could have imagined. And I know I was pursuing the calling that I had on my heart that God placed in me before I was even born. And I would say, so that kind of ties in with my deeply held belief. I believe that you pursue your purpose in life that God's laid out for you. And when you do that, you're really making an impact for God and, mm-hmm. and living out your purpose in life. So,
yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's faith. It's faith and trust and all of it all together. Yeah.
You can't lose, you know, the good or the bad. You're fulfilling your purpose and there's a purpose for everything. And I just think when you know that, you can accept that. It's not always easy, but it does make it easier. Every time I go up on stage in front of the mic, I'm pretty darn nervous. And yet it's always a huge reward. And at the end of the day, like I said, I know, at least for right now, I'm pursuing what God's calling me towards. And there's really nothing more satisfying. So,
That's great. That's beautiful. Yeah, there is nothing more satisfying than following that purpose, for sure.
Yeah.
Amen. Yeah. If there was a mic drop moment, boom. There you go.
Amen. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Great. I appreciate you having me on. This has been fun.
Yeah, I've loved it. And again, I'm just going to say thank you. Reiterate again, thank you for your openness, for your honesty and your vulnerability, because it's something that is so authentic and so relatable for people. And I think that's really what we're here to do, is to help relate to other people so that we can all work together to heal not only ourselves, but to help other people along their path, find that relatability that they can go, okay, I can pull just a little bit of something from that that can, you know, bring me up to where I need to be, encourage me or inspire me to take that next step.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And I've had it so much in my life. So, I love to, as they say, send the elevator back down to somebody else and try to lift them up a little bit. So,
yeah. Oh, we're going to hit that elevator button, send it down for the next person.
That's right.
Thank you so much, Elliot. Go outside and enjoy your beautiful, beautiful Los Angeles afternoon.
I will do that.
You're in my gray Nashville pre-spring day. Couple more weeks, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, sunny skies are coming.
Yeah, and next time I'm in LA, I'm gonna shoot you a text. Maybe we'll go grab a drink or go grab some lunch or something. That would be great.
Absolutely. Please do.
I will. All right. Thanks. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
I will. Thanks, man. Thanks so much for tuning in today, guys. If you have an idea for an interview or you would like to share your own story, I would love to hear from you. Send me a message at dawn@thesoulgoals.com. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love for you to leave a review and to consider following and subscribing to the show. With weekly releases, there is always another interesting story to be heard. I do hope that today's guest and their words have helped to bring some extra light to your day and encouraged you to find a deeper space of your very own soul goals. Until next time, friends, remember that everyone has a story, and every story matters.